Ikatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ikatra AI. Welcome, everyone. I'm your host.
And I'm your guide through today's big idea.
We've got a fascinating question for you today. When you face a really tough problem, maybe something high stakes, who should you trust? The smartest expert you can find.
Or maybe the average opinion of a big, diverse group, even if many in that group aren't experts at all.
It sounds counterintuitive, doesn't it? But that's the core idea behind James Surowiecki's hugely influential book, The Wisdom of Crowds.
Yeah, most of us instinctively think complex problems need genius. Surowiecki flips that script. He argues that under the right conditions, the crowd is often much smarter than the smartest person in it.
Exactly. And that's our mission for this deep dive, to unpack why that is. We're digging into the specific, maybe not obvious conditions needed for this collective intelligence to actually work.
And why it sometimes fails spectacularly. We're drawing on a stack of summaries and analyses of Surowiecki's work here, pulling together threads from economics, psychology, history, basically giving you the distilled insights.
Okay, let's jump right in, because the whole theory, it kind of hinges on this one amazing story from way back, the famous ox story.
Ah, yes, the foundational anecdote. Surowiecki really popularized this one. It happened back in 1906. Sir Francis Galton, a very famous statistician, was at a county fair.
Right. And there was this contest. Guess the weight of this ox after it was, well, prepared for market.
Exactly. Guess the slaughtered weight. Now, Galton, he was, let's say, skeptical about the intelligence of the average person. He figured the crowd's guesses would be all over the place. Totally useless.
He expected noise, basically. Chaos.
Pretty much. But then he looked at the actual results. About 800 people participated.
Right.
Farmers, butchers, sure, but also just regular folks with no clue about oxen.
Okay.
The actual weight of the ox was 11,198 pounds. Galton took all 800 guesses, calculated the average guess.
Don't leave us hanging.
The average guess was 11,197 pounds.
Wow. 1 pound off. That's uncanny.
It's incredibly close. And here's the kicker. That collective average guess was better, more accurate than any single guess made by the cattle experts at the fair.
Okay, so that can't just be luck. What's going on there?
Well, that's where Surowiecki comes in. He's not an academic himself, more of a brilliant journalist, a synthesizer. He saw this story and connected it to all sorts of modern decision-making, markets, politics, you name it.
So what is the core idea then, if it's not just finding smart people?
The idea is that collective intelligence isn't about everyone agreeing. It's not consensus. It's actually about the math. If you have a diverse group making independent guesses, their errors tend to cancel each other out.
Ah, so my error might be too high, yours might be too low. And if enough people guess independently, those random errors wash out, leaving something close to the truth.
Exactly. The average zeroes in on the signal by canceling out the noise. It's the aggregation of diverse independent errors.
Okay, independent feels key there. But you said this wisdom is conditional. It doesn't always work.
Absolutely crucial point. The crowd isn't always wise. Sometimes it's a mob. It only works if the group structure is right. Surowiecki identifies four essential conditions.
Four pillars of wisdom, let's call them.
Good way to put it. You need diversity of opinion, independence of the members' judgments, decentralization of knowledge, and finally, a good mechanism for aggregation, bringing it all together.
Okay, let's unpack those. Diversity and independence first. Diversity seems, well, obvious maybe. If everyone thinks alike, you get blind spots. Groupthink.
Right. But it's specifically cognitive diversity. Different ways of seeing the problem, different experiences, different mental tools. It's about bringing genuinely different pieces of information or perspectives to the table.
Makes sense. Mm-hmm. But independence, that feels harder in the real world. Think about a team meeting. People influence each other, right? The boss speaks first or someone sounds really confident.
Yeah.
That's the danger zone. Independence means your private information, your own judgment, isn't totally overridden by what others are saying or doing. If you have a doubt, but you stay quiet because everyone else seems on board,
then your unique insight is lost to the group.
Precisely. The group effectively gets dumber because it's not using all the information its members possess. Herding behavior, following the leader, that kills independence.
And Surowiecki points to some pretty serious examples where this went wrong, like the intelligence failures before the Iraq War in 2003.
Yes, that's often cited as a case where a lack of cognitive diversity combined with pressure for consensus, a lack of independence, led to overlooking critical information. dissenting views, the ones that question the main assumptions, were sidelined.
So the system basically filtered out the wisdom it potentially held.
It rewarded agreement over accuracy. A systematic shared error took hold because independence broke down.
Okay, so that leads directly to the other two pillars, decentralization and aggregation. If diversity and independence provide the raw material, how do we actually use it?
Decentralization is about recognizing that knowledge isn't all held at the top. Often, the crucial insights are scattered throughout a system, held by people on the ground. It's about leveraging what Surowiecki calls local, tacit knowledge.
Local knowledge?
Yeah.
Like the engineer who knows the specific tolerance of a part, not just the overall design spec.
Exactly that. Or the salesperson who understands a particular customer's needs better than anyone in marketing. Centralized systems often struggle to access or even value that granular, specific knowledge.
The Linux operating system development is a great example of that, isn't it? Thousands of programmers worldwide contributing specialized knowledge, coordinated but not centrally controlled in a traditional corporate sense.
A perfect example of decentralized problem solving. It harnesses specialized skills from all over.
Okay, so you have diverse, independent, decentralized knowledge floating around. How do you bring it together? That's aggregation.
Yes. Aggregation is the mechanism that pulls all those disparate pieces of information into a collective judgment. It could be simple, like averaging the guesses in the aux contest.
Or a vote.
Or a vote. Or a market price. Think about prediction markets, like the Iowa electronic markets. People buy and sell contracts on future events, like election outcomes. The market price acts as a constantly updating aggregate of the crowd's collective prediction.
And they're often remarkably accurate, right? Better than many traditional polls sometimes.
Often, yes. Because the price efficiently aggregates all the different beliefs and information held by the traders without forcing them into a consensus meeting. It synthesizes disagreement into a single number.
Okay, so we have the four pillars: diversity, independence, decentralization, aggregation. Now, what kinds of problems are groups actually good at solving when these conditions are met?
Surowiecki breaks it down into three main types of challenges: cognition problems, coordination problems, and cooperation problems.
Cognition. Like the ox. Problems with a definite right answer.
Exactly. Finding the truth or making the best forecast. A really dramatic example is the search for the lost U.S. submarine, the USS Scorpion, back in 1968.
Oh, right. Huge search area. Seemingly impossible task.
Totally. But a small team, led by a naval officer named John Craven, didn't rely on just one expert. He gathered a diverse group of submarine specialists, mathematicians, salvage experts, and had them independently bet on the probabilities of different scenarios for where the sub might be.
So he used a kind of aggregation method, like a prediction market almost.
Kind of, yeah. He used Bayesian statistics to aggregate their probabilistic guesses. By combining all those diverse independent judgments, they narrowed the search field dramatically and found the submarine against incredible odds.
That's powerful. And on a lighter note, you mentioned Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, the Ask the Audience lifeline.
Huh. Yes, it's correct something like over 90% of the time. Way better than the single phone a friend expert. It's a perfect, simple illustration of the principle: diversity and independence in action.
Okay, so that's cognition. What about coordination?
Coordination problems are about how members of a group can align their individual behaviors without a central director telling everyone what to do. Think about driving in traffic.
Or just walking down a busy sidewalk. People naturally form lanes, avoid collisions, mostly.
Exactly. No one's in charge, but order emerges. Millions of individual decisions coordinate smoothly. The classic economic example is the market price itself. It coordinates supply and demand across millions of producers and consumers without any central planning agency knowing everything. Price is the coordination signal.
Right. Makes sense.
Yay.
Okay, third type, cooperation problems. This sounds trickier.
It often is. This is about getting self-interested individuals to contribute to a common good, even when it might be easier to free ride. Think paying taxes or conserving a shared resource.
The classic tragedy of the commons or the free rider problem. Why contribute if I benefit anyway? How does the wisdom of crowds help here?
Surowiecki argues it relies heavily on building norms of trust and fairness within the group, and crucially, the group's willingness to punish those who don't cooperate, who defect.
So, social pressure and consequences.
Yes. People pay taxes not just because they'll get caught if they don't, but often because they trust others are paying too, and they believe it's fair. Experiments like the Ultimatum Game Show, we have a strong instinct to punish unfairness, even at a personal cost. That underpins cooperation in large groups.
Okay, this framework is incredibly useful. But we do need to talk about the dark side. When does the crowd turn into, well, an irrational mob?
That happens precisely when those four pillars crumble. The most common failure point, as we touched on, is the loss of independence.
People stop thinking for themselves and just follow the herd.
Exactly. That leads to herding and information cascades. An information cascade is when people start basing their decisions on the actions of others, ignoring their own private information. The first few people do something, others assume they know best and copy them, and soon everyone's doing it, even if the initial decision was flawed.
That sounds exactly like financial bubbles. The dot-com boom, for instance.
Textbook example. Investors stopped looking at the actual value of companies and just bought stocks because, well, because everyone else was, and prices were going up. Rational analysis got thrown out the window. People followed the herd, amplifying the error instead of canceling it out.
The errors become correlated, systematic, instead of random and diverse.
Precisely. And this isn't just about huge market crowds. Surowiecki also digs into failures in smaller hierarchical groups, what's often called groupthink. The space shuttle disasters, Challenger and Columbia, are tragic examples.
Right. These weren't anonymous crowds, but teams of experts at NASA. What went wrong there, according to this framework?
It was a catastrophic failure of aggregation and decentralization fueled by a lack of psychological safety that suppressed independence. The engineers, the ones with the crucial local knowledge about the O-rings or the foam shedding.
Their warnings weren't effectively heard or acted upon by management?
They were marginalized or dismissed. The culture emphasized consensus and sticking to the schedule over raising difficult truths. Critical dissenting information didn't get aggregated into the final decision. There's a chilling summary insight Surowiecki highlights. The organization knew the truth because specific individuals held the data, but the organization as a whole did not.
Wow. That shows how a system designed poorly can be dumber than its parts.
Absolutely. The structure failed to harness the knowledge within it.
Okay, so this is all fascinating theory, but let's bring it home. How can we, you know, the listeners, actually apply these ideas in our jobs, our lives?
The applications are really practical. For anyone managing a team or running meetings, the big takeaway is actively fighting groupthink. Protect independence.
Wow.
One simple technique Surowiecki mentions is brainwriting. Before any open discussion on a key issue, have everyone write down their initial thoughts or opinions privately.
So the first person to speak, or the most senior person, doesn't anchor everyone else's thinking.
Exactly. It helps ensure more diverse, independent viewpoints actually get surfaced before social influence takes over.
That's a great tip. What about for personal decisions? Like, say, you're trying to decide on a career change or making a big purchase.
You can consciously apply the four pillars, seek advice from a genuinely diverse group of people, different backgrounds, perspectives, ages. Don't just ask your buddies who think like you.
Okay, diversity first.
Then make sure their opinions are independent. Try not to tell advisor B what advisor A said, so they aren't just reacting to each other. Get their raw, private take.
Got it. Decentralize the input gathering.
Right. And then you become the aggregation mechanism. Don't just follow the advice of the person you like best or who sounded most confident. Weigh all the inputs, look for patterns, synthesize the different perspectives, and make your informed decision based on that collective wisdom you've gathered.
It really forces you to remember that counterintuitive point. The best decisions often come from wrestling with disagreement, not smooth consensus.
Absolutely. If everyone agrees too quickly, it might be a sign the group isn't thinking hard enough or diverse enough. Contest and disagreement are features, not bugs, of wise groups.
So the big paradigm shift here is maybe stop searching for the single genius leader or expert to solve everything.
And start focusing on designing smarter systems, better processes, better group structures that can effectively harness the intelligence that's already distributed among many people.
It's actually quite an optimistic view, isn't it? That collective capability is there if we just structure things right.
It is. And that leads to a final thought, maybe a challenge for you listening. Surowiecki gives us diagnostic tools. So ask yourself, where in your own life, your workplace, your community, is the system maybe too centralized, too homogenous?
Or lacking a good way to bring together independent views.
Exactly. Is there a local knowledge resource that's being ignored? What's one small change you could make, maybe starting tomorrow, to better tap into the wisdom around you, to design a slightly smarter system and avoid the pitfalls of the mob?
A powerful question to ponder. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.